Welp, the deputies collected their prisoner and pulled out that afternoon. The RCMP were due in town within the next several days. In the marshal's office, Mills turned to Earl Sutcliffe.
You'll stay to sign the papers and give the prisoners to the Canadians?
Indeed, I will. And what will you do?
I have a man to arrest.
Of course you do. Here is pen and paper, Marshal.
What am I supposed to do with these?
Leave me the name of your next of kin.
Foolishly, the outlaws in the camp Smoke Attack came after him. He led him on a wild goose hunt in the mountains and then tired of the game. He took his rifle from the boot, then selected a position on a ridge where he could effectively cover his back trail. The gang came in a rush, whipping their lathered and tired horses. Smoke emptied two saddles, and the others retreated down the slope, for the moment out of range. Smoke waited. The old mountain man preacher had taught him many things as a boy, one of which was patience.
Who you be up yonder?
An avenging angel!
What's your beef with us?
Smoke shifted his eyes, sensing that conversation on the part of the outlaws would be nothing more than a cover for someone trying to slip around and flank him. But he had not chosen his position without an eye for detail. To his left lay a sheer rock face. To his right, a clear field of fire, virtually without cover for anyone except a very skilled engine warrior. The outlaws would have to come at him from the front.
You deef up there?
Smoke offered no reply. The shots fell far short of his position. It was an impasse, but one that Smoke knew he would win simply because he had more patience than the outlaws. Eventually, he rode back down the trail.
See you, boys. Let's go, Buck.
Smoke decided he would hit another outlaw camp that evening. He liked the night. He was very good in the night. The Orientals had a word for it that Smoke had read in a book Sally had bought for him.
Ninja.
Smoke liked that.
That dude is still at the hotel, ma'am. He's gonna get his ashes hauled if he don't stop with his bad mouth against Smoke.
He'd just sue you, Pearly.
Oh, one of them.
I'm afraid so. What's he saying about my husband?
That Smoke has turned cold-blooded killer? That he enjoys killing? That he's crazy? Monty's gonna have to put him in jail for his own protection if he keeps this up.
I wired friends back east to check into whether there is any connection between Judge Richards and Larry. They could find none, at least on the surface. I don't believe there is any connection. Larry is just meddling, hoping to discredit Smoke in my eyes.
You want me to conk him on the head and toss him in an eastbound freight wagon, ma'am?
No, Pearly. But I'm not going to ask anyone to protect him either. Larry is, I'm afraid, going to learn a hard lesson about the West and its people.
Mm-hmm. He's liable to end up in a pine box, ma'am.
Yes, there is always that possibility. But he's a grown man and has to take responsibility for his words and deeds. I warned him of the consequences if he persisted in spreading vile gossip about my husband. We'll just let the chips fall, Pearly.
It won't be long, ma'am. Somebody's gonna tell that greenhorn lawyer to check better fold pretty darn quick. And ma'am, it's likely to be me that does it.
Larry, you are heading for a stomping if you don't close that mouth.
For days now, the citizens in and around Big Rock had put up with the Easterner's bad-mouthing of Smoke Jensen. Most of them felt it was just the man's ignorance and they let it slide. But it was getting wearing, very wearing. Finally, in the cafe, Pearly reached his limit.
That's it, mister. I've had enough of your flapping mouth. Now shut the damn thing and shut it now.
I beg your pardon, sir.
I said for you to close that flapping trap of yours. Smoke ain't here to defend himself against your lying mouth, and I, for one, have had enough of it.
Sir, I am allowed to have an opinion. That is a basic right. One only has to look at Jensen's record of brutality and callousness to see that the man has no regard for law and order and the rights of others.
Pearly smacked Larry right out of his chair. He stared up at the ranch hand from the floor, his mouth bloody and his eyes wide from shock. Larry looked over at the sheriff. Monte Carson was recovering from his wounds, his left arm still in a sling where the .45 slug had busted his forearm. He stared at Larry with decidedly unfriendly eyes.
Do something!
What do you want me to do?
This brute assaulted me! I want him placed under arrest!
You're under arrest, Pearly. Fine for disturbing the peace, $2.
Silver dollars hit the floor all around the cafe from the pockets of the patrons.
Well, hell, that's more like $20. I guess that means you can break the law a few more times, Pearly.
What? What kind of justice is this?
Western kind.
Pearly jerked the man up by his shirt.
Unhand me, you heathen!
If you say so.
He tossed Larry out the front door and the man landed in a horse trough. The cafe owner walked to the door.
And don't you come back in here! You are now officially barred from dining in my establishment!
The cuisine was terrible anyway. Ignorant oaf! I'm going to sue everybody in that establishment!
Get off the goddamn street, or I'll put you in jail for attempting to incite a riot!
You put me in jail? You've not heard the last of this, sir. I am an attorney of some reputation. I can assure you all that the consequences will be dire.
I counted the silver dollars. You got 9 more chances, Pearly.
Thanks. Hey, Percy, come here.
I most certainly will not.
Then I'm coming to you.
Pearly stepped out and that slicker just took off running. And Pearly was right behind him.
No, you keep away from me.
Mills Walsdorf led his men some 12 miles out of town and then halted the parade.
What's up, Marshal Mills?
We make camp here.
A lot of daylight left.
Well, we have plans to make, and that might take several days, perhaps even a week or more. We can't just go riding willy-nilly after Smoke Jensen.
I wondered why you brought so many provisions.
We must always be prepared. We're on our own now, men. No one back in town knows where we are. I told Earl we were heading east.
But we rode north.
Precisely.
I'll gather some firewood.
We'll all gather wood, because we're going to be here for some time.
Smoke slipped off his boots and stuck his feet into moccasins that had been especially made for him. They were Apache moccasins with high leggings that would prevent his trousers from catching on low branches or underbrush. He blackened his face with dirt and tied a dark bandana around his forehead. He checked his guns, and then he checked his knife. Then he picked up his rifle and slung it over his shoulder. He knew where another of Slater's camps was now, having checked the area carefully with his field glasses, spotting the smoke and mentally marking the location. This coming night was gonna turn deadly for someone. Smoke was moving long before twilight placed its dusky hand upon the high country. He was dressed in clothing that would blend with the night and the terrain, and there was nothing on him that would rattle or clank. Moonlight, when it came up, might reflect off the brass of his 44 rounds in his ammo belt, but that was just about the only thing unnatural about him in the gathering gloom. He slipped through the timber and brush like a wraith. The outlaws were a careless bunch, and Smoke spotted their campfires long before he caught sight of any human movement. When he was within hailing distance of them, he squatted down and became as one with the brush. He moved only his eyes as he studied the encampment. He concluded that Slater had split his people up into at least 3 bunches, maybe 4, since he wasn't sure of the size of the gang. This gang of trash and thugs numbered about 15. They were all heavily armed, their weapons looking well used but well cared for. Smoke moved closer to better listen.
I'm getting sick of just sitting here with no whiskey or women or nothing.
I'm gonna grab some shut-eye and dream of sweet little gals like them 2 honeys we done porked the other day. My, they was nice when they wasn't crying or screaming. I was so sick of that noise, it was a relief to shut them up.
Yeah, fine. You go to sleep, then. I'm gonna go take a crap.
Smoke's face tightened in silent rage. He knew which 2 girls they were talking about. He buried them both. Smoke watched the one man leave the bonfire-lit area and move toward the darker timber, toward where Smoke squatted, waiting to strike. The man was removing his breeches as he walked to find a spot to relieve himself. Smoke wiped his bloody blade clean on the dead man's shirt, rolled the body under some brush, then shifted positions. He moved right to the edge of the encampment, very close to where an outlaw lay on his dirty blankets, his head on a knapsack probably filled with his possibles. Smoke edged closer and looked with disgust at what was tied to the man's saddle. A human scalp. Blonde hair. Long, blonde hair. Smoke cut the man's throat with a movement as furtive as a ghost and as fast and deadly as a viper. He eased the man's head down until his chin was resting on his chest. With the bloody knife in his hand, Smoke backed away, again shifting positions, working his way around to the other side of the camp.
Hey, Frank! You get lost out in them woods? Frank! Frank! God damn it. Dope! Where in the hell did Frank go?
It don't look like Dope's waking up.
After all that hollering?
Well, he ain't moving.
Somebody go over yonder and kick him a time or two.
I'll go if you promise to quit yammering. Ugh.
The outlaw walked over to Dolph and nudged him with the toe of his boot. Dolph's head lolled to one side, the movement exposing the horrible wound on his neck.
Oh, damn! His throat's been cut!
Smoke shot him, the .44 slug severing his spine. The man slumped to the ground in a boneless heap.
Shit!
Get your guns! Kill the bastard!
The camp erupted in a mass of running men, all grabbing for their weapons and firing in every conceivable direction, hitting nothing but air. Smoke shot one in the belly, doubling him over, and dotted another one's left eye with lead. He decided it was time to haul out of there. He pushed his luck and skill far enough. He left behind him a camp filled with frightened and confused outlaws. They were still shooting at shadows and hitting no more than that. Smoke figured if he was lucky, two or three of them might shoot each other.
God damn it, Tap. It had to be Jensen. Nobody else would be that stupid. He's got to be tooken out, and tooken out damn quick. He could screw up the whole plan.
What plan, Lee? All we've been doing for days is sitting around on our butts. If something don't happen pretty damn quick, I'm pulling out for greener pastures.
Yeah, I'm with Tap. We got money in our pockets and no place to spend it. There's thousands of dollars worth of gold and silver in this area, and we ain't doing a damn thing about taking it. I'm tired of sitting around. Let's get in action, Lee.
Couple more days, Zach. Just a couple more days.
I got news!
What news?
Oh, let me catch my breath. I've been riding all night to get here. Oh, a federal judge back east done put out warrants on Smoke Jensen. Murder warrants. From that shooting over to Idaho some years back, 3 warrants. The reward money totals over $30,000 to the man who brings them in, dead or alive.
Well now, ain't that something? What's Jensen doing about this situation?
They say he's on the run. Somewhere betwixt here and the border.
$30,000. That's a fortune. A man could live real good for a long time with that money.
Oh, no. There's more news. The word is out, and bounty hunters from all over is coming in. If we're going to do something about Jensen, we damn well better get moving for all them other hard cases come a-looking.
All right. Let's plan. Now, for sure, we can't go after him in a bunch. He'd see and hear us coming miles away. So let's split up into groups of 6. That'd be damn near 10 groups working the mountains. Y'all talk it over and form up with men you want to ride with. Then we'll settle down and go over what group is going to cover what area.
The men split up into groups of 6 and 7. Each group made up of men who had known each other for a long time or knew the other's reputation. Lee waved his group over to him. To his mind, he had chosen well the 5 men who would ride with him. They were all vicious killers. Kurt Holt, Ed Malone, Boots Pearson, Harry Jennings, and Blackjack Simpson. The young punks had banded together as Lee had figured they would, with the punk kid Pecos as their leader. All the other groups were electing leaders too. Curly Rogers was bossing one group, Al Martin another. Whit Reichard was fronting another group and Ray Hightower yet another. The last two were led by Crocker and Graham. Personally, Lee didn't give a damn which group got Smoke Jensen, just as long as somebody got him. Not that he didn't think $30,000 was a lot of money. It was. But there was a lot more than that to be had in these mountains once Jensen was out of the way.
All right. Let's ride, boys. We got us a legend to kill.
Smoke sat the saddle like a man born to it. His back was straight and his eyes constantly moving, scanning the terrain ahead of him and on both sides. He had stopped to rest on a bluff high above the road that led to the little village, and he was not surprised to see wagon after wagon. There were wagons and there were buggies of all descriptions and men on horseback, all heading for the town. It wasn't gold or silver that drew them there, although that was part of it. It was the news that Smoke Jensen was a wanted man. Smoke rested his horses and squatted down, his field glasses in his big hands, and studied the passing parade unfolding far below him.
Guess I should be flattered having big-time bounty hunters like Ace Riley and Big Bob Masters after me. And there's Lily LeFevre in her fancy buggy. Looks like she got two or three wagons of horse behind her, too. She never misses an opportunity.
Smoke adjusted the glasses.
Well, I'll be damned. Louis Longmont.
There he was, in the flesh, riding a beautiful high-stepping black with a wagon pulled by four big mules right behind him, driven by his personal valet and cook, Andre. Louis Longmont, a millionaire professional gambler who owned a casino in Monte Carlo, owned banks and railroads and entire blocks of cities, and who was one of the most feared gunfighters in all the world. And that wagon would be jars of caviar, cases of fine French wines, and plenty of Lewis's favorite Scotch whiskey, Glenlivet. Smoke felt a lump knot up in his throat as he scanned the road below. There was cotton pickings from up in Puma County, Wyoming. Their paths had crossed a time or two when Smoke had pulled cotton out of a couple of bad spots. And now he had come to help out Smoke.
I'd just be damned.
Smoke focused his glasses next on Johnny North, who had a ranch about 20 miles from Smoke and Sally's Sugarloaf. Johnny had married the widow Colby and hung up his six-shooters years back. Now, he had cleaned them up, oiled the leather, and strapped them on, and he was coming to help his neighbor.
Good God, I thought he was dead.
Smoke was looking now at the legendary Charlie Starr.
Going to get real interesting around this town very soon. Real interesting.
Smoke leaned back against a huge boulder. If he was right in his thinking, Lee Slater was probably right now splitting up his gang into small groups and starting a concentrated search for their prey, that being Smoke Jensen. Smoke smiled. He hoped Lee would do that. Small groups were easier to handle. He took his field glasses and once more studied the increase in traffic on the road below. The town was gonna boom for a time. The stage line would put on more stages and roll them in and out at least once a day from north and south, maybe even more than that.
Well now, there's Dan Diamond.
Diamond was another bounty hunter. The man riding with him was familiar, but it took Smoke a minute or so to put a name on the face.
Nap Jacobs.
Nap was a thoroughly bad man. Fast with a gun and seemingly without a nerve or a scruple in his entire body. And he didn't like Smoke at all. And then there was Morse Patton, another bounty hunter who hated Smoke Jensen.
Well, time to go, boys. Gonna find you both a nice little box canyon with good graze and water. Let you both rest for a time. Then, I'm gonna lay out some ambushes.
Good to see you again, Earl.
Gamblers shook hands with Earl Sutcliffe.
Louis Longmont. By the Lord, it's grand to see you, Louis. It's going to get rather interesting around this little village before very long. Who are your friends?
Johnny North, a neighbor of Smoke Jensen's. Cotton Pickens, a rancher from up Wyoming way. And this, Earl, is Charlie Starr.
I am awed and humbled, sir.
Thank you. I take it you're a friend of Smoke Jensen.
Indeed. Gentlemen, let's go into my office and I'll bring you up to date on Smoke's troubles.
Charlie Starr, Johnny North, Cotton Pickens, and Louis Longmont weren't the only newcomers to the town. Larry Tipson had taken the first stage out of Big Rock, heading down to where Smoke was hiding out. He kept a very low profile and kept his big mouth shut concerning his opinions of Smoke Jensen. He decided that since the town was growing so quickly, he didn't have sense enough to know what was causing the rapid growth, nor that it would very likely bust as quickly as it boomed. He would hang out his shingle in the newly named town of Rio. Everybody needed the services of a good attorney from time to time, and this looked like the ideal spot to make some quick money. When he stepped off the stage, he was appalled. All those rough-looking fellas carrying guns and knives right out in the open. Shocking. He'd never seen anything like it. The hotel was full, so he headed for the saloon to get a room. He managed to get the last one, and he did that by paying 5 times the usual going rate.
I shall require clean sheets on my bed.
Them sheets ain't been slept on but 3 times. Last fella used them even had a flea dip.
Change the sheets.
All right.
As Larry turned to the stairs, he was stopped in his tracks at the sight outside the saloon window of Louis Longmont, shaking hands with what appeared to be a constable of some sort.
Louis Longmont? Here?
Larry walked to the window and peered out, seeing the 6 guns belted around the millionaire's waist. So the rumors were true after all, Larry mused. The man was an adventurer, but was he here to hunt down Smoke Jensen or to aid the gunfighter? And who was that long-haired, grizzled-looking older man? Obviously some sort of gunfighter, but it was hard to tell since all those gathered around the constable wore 2 guns tied down. He walked back over to the bartender.
Excuse me again. Do you have inside facilities?
Huh?
Water closets inside?
What? Hell no! That's unsanitary!
Heathen.
Larry turned to the stairs once more.
Hey, bud.
Yes?
You're forgetting your trunk.
Yes, have someone carry it up for me.
Oh, good God almighty. Tote your own damn trunk, mister.
Fine.
Larry climbed the stairs, sweating under the load of his trunk.
All in all, the West has got to be the most barbaric and inhospitable place I have ever traveled.
With Earl Sutcliffe as the Marshal of Rio, few dared to fire a pistol even for fun. And the whole town knew, within minutes of their arrival, that Cotton Pickens, Johnny North, Charlie Starr, and Louis Longmont were on the side of the law with Earl Sutcliffe. That knowledge smoothed out just a whole bunch of otherwise sharp and explosive tempers. It would take a pure D damn fool to go up against those 5.
How many men in Slater's bunch?
50 to 75 are the numbers I keep hearing, Johnny.
Smoke's a tough old boy, but he's not indestructible. He's gonna need some help with this one. Come the morning, I'll provision up and head out for the Lonesome. Louis, I think you and Johnny and Cotton ought to stay close to here. This town's a-fixin' to bust wide open, and Earl here is gonna need some help keeping order. Besides, Smoke needs all the friendly ears he can use right here.
I agree. Sooner or later, Smoke is gonna tire of the mountains and come into town. And to hell with the U.S. Marshals. We need to be here to back him up.
Excellent. And now, we have to see about rooms for you gentlemen.
No need. Andre is hiring people now to erect my saloon and gambling hall. We'll have board floors and wooden sides, but a canvas top. I'll have the workmen build an addition to the saloon for us. Until then, we'll sleep out under God's blanket.
I'm going to start putting my provisions together. I get it done soon enough, I just might take off while there's a few hours of daylight left.
Get whatever you need and charge it, Charlie. Your money is no good in this town.
I ain't no broke saddle bum, Earl.
Oh, of course you're not. If you wish, you can settle up when you return from the mountains.
Thank you. See you, boys.
Charlie Starr is one randy old puma.
I concur, Johnny. Have you ever seen him in action, Earl?
No, never.
It's an awesome sight. He's a little slower than he used to be, but still one of the fastest guns around. And he never misses.
I would like to get word to Smoke that you are here, but I haven't the foggiest where he might be.
Knowing Smoke as I do, he's probably already heard. Although, how he manages to learn these things mystifies me.
Injuns say that eagles come tell him.
I've heard that too, Cotton.
Perhaps he simply squatted on a mountain and watched the road below through field glasses.
I like the eagle story better.
A bounty hunter called Slim Williams left the road miles from the newly named town of Rio and headed into the high country. He'd come upon tracks, a man riding and a pack horse behind. He found where the man had dismounted for a drink of water at a rushing mountain stream. Big man, judging by his boot tracks. And Smoke Jensen was a big man. But then, Slim lost the trail. He wandered around for an hour and never could pick it back up. He sat his horse for a time, thinking things through. His eyes caught movement in the timber, about 100 yards away. Then the man, and he was sure it was a man, was gone.
What the hell?
He walked over to the spot where he'd seen the movement. There were tracks, and the print was about the same size as those he'd seen back at that little creek.
Huh. Wearing moccasins, though. Well, that wasn't no damn Injun. Looked like he had some sort of black bandana tied around his head, and his hair was short.
Slim glanced back to where he'd left his horse. Or, rather, where he thought he'd left his horse.
Now, what the hell? Where's Shotgun? Shotgun! Where'd you go? Come on. Come to Slim, boy. Oh, goddammit, all to hell. Shotgun! Come here, you son of a bitch!
Shotgun was tired. He needed a rest.
What? Where are you? Who are you? You give me back my damn horse, you thief, or I'll drill you!
A back-shooting murderer calling me a thief. That's funny.
The hell you say?
You looking for Smoke Jensen?
How'd you do that?
I said you looking for Smoke Jensen.
That ain't none of your concern, mister.
I can lead you to him.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I get half the reward money, though.
You go suck an egg.
Slim studied the spot where his horse had once been. The stranger's offer started sounding better.
Tell you what I'll do, mister. You step out so I can see you, and we'll talk.
You put that gun up, and I'll do that.
Shit. All right, deal.
Turn around.
Oh, hello, Smoke. It's been a long time. Years.
You should have stayed home, Slim.
Man's got to make a living, Smoke.
You know damn well those warrants out on me are bogus. You're a manhunter, Slim. Out for the money. I got no use for scum like you.
You ain't got no call to talk to me like that, Smoke. This ain't nothing personal between us. You kill more than your share of men. You ain't no better than I am.
Well, let God be the judge of that, Slim. You came looking for me. Now you found me. Make your play.
Well, hell, I'm willing to deal, Smoke. I can just ride on out of here and not look back.
That's the same deal you made with Cloudwalker. Then you shot him in the back. All the time knowing he was an innocent man.
Shit, Smoke, he was a damn Injun.
He was an innocent man. I've stayed with Crows and Utes and Sioux and Cheyenne. I have a lot of good Indian friends. It doesn't make any difference to me if a man is red, white, black, or yellow.
Don't preach to me, Jensen! I don't need no goddamn gun slick sermonizing to me!
Then draw, Slim.
Slim went for his gun.
All right, you son of a...
Smoke's .44 caught him dead center in his chest and knocked him back against a tree. Slim somehow managed to pull iron then. Smoke's second shot tore into his belly. His .44 dropped from dying fingers. He slumped to the ground.
Oh, you gonna bury me proper, ain't you, Jensen?
I'll toss some branches and rocks over you, Slim. I don't have a shovel.
God, I hate you, Jensen.
Well, now, I don't understand that, Slim. What did I ever do to you?
Smoke went through Slim's pockets before he piled branches and rocks over the body to discourage smaller animals, all the while knowing that a bear could and probably would rip it apart in seconds. He would give the money to some needy family. Smoke shoved one of Slim's .44s behind his gun belt and kept the other one in leather, hanging on his saddle horn. He inspected the late Slim's Winchester .44-40. It was in excellent condition, and this one had an extra rear sight located several inches behind the hammer for greater accuracy. He found three boxes of .44-40s in the saddlebags, too. Slim also had a nice poke of food, some bacon and bread and biscuits, and three cans of beans. That would come in handy on the trail. Smoke hesitated, then carved Slim's name on the tree that towered over the man. He put the date below the name. Smoke mounted up and looked back at Slim Williams' final resting place.
You should have picked up another line of work, Slim. That's about the best I can say for you. God's gonna have the final word anyway. Yeah.
Charlie Starr sipped on his whiskey prior to hitting the saddle for the High Lonesome. Most of the men in the crowded saloon were chance takers and gamblers and gun hands and bounty hunters. None of them knew the man with the long gray hair with the tied down guns, the wooden handles worn smooth. But they could sense danger all around them, except for one punk named Bobby Jones.
Hey! Old man! I'm talking to you, you shaggy-haired thing, you! Damn! Your hair's so shaggy it's blocking your ears. Maybe I ought to give you a haircut. Goddamn mangy old fart. You wear them two guns like you think you're hot stuff. Turn around and prove it.
Larry Tibson chose that moment to emerge from his room upstairs.
Barkeep, where is the bathtub?
Shut up and get back in your room!
I most certainly will not.
You goddamn old turd! Turn around and face me!
What on earth is taking place here? I want to take a bath!
Shut your trap, boy. Lead's a fixin' to fly.
Lead?
Charlie Starr finished his drink.
Go home, boy. I ain't looking for trouble.
Well, you got it.
Why? I don't even know you. I never seen you before in my life. Why me?
'Cause I think you maybe believe you're a gun hawk. That's why.
Son, I was handling guns years before you were born. Now why don't you just sit down and finish your drink, and I'll just walk out the bats.
Yellow! The old man's yellow. He's afraid of Bobby Jones.
I never heard of you, Bobby. Are you looking for a reputation? Is that it?
I got a rep.
I ain't never seen none of your graveyards, boy.
You just ain't looked in the right place. As far as that goes, where's your graveyards?
All over the land, son. From Canada to Mexico. From Missouri to California.
You say?
That's right, son. I say.
Earl Sutcliffe pushed open the bat wings and stood there, sizing up the situation.
What's the trouble here?
Stay out of this, Marshal. This is between me and this old goat here.
Do you know who that old goat is?
Don't make no difference to me. I don't like this old coot's looks, and I told him so. He's afraid of me.
That man is not afraid of anything. That's Charlie Starr.
What?
Give it up, son. Sit down and live.
Hell with it! You're a yellow old man. Charlie Starr's done turned yellow. You're standing on your reputation, and I'm gonna be the man who jerks it out from under you.
Enough talk. Make your play. You stupid little snot.
Here now, this has gone entirely too far. You there, you stop picking on that boy.
Do stifle yourself, sir.
Just then, Lewis Longmont, Johnny North, and Cotton Pickens walked into the saloon and stood on either side of Earl.
$50 says the kid never clears leather.
You're on. That there's Bobby Jones. He's faster than Smoke Jensen.
He couldn't lick Smoke's boots.
What? Draw, you old fart!
After you, boy. I don't ever want it said I took advantage of a young punk.
I ain't no punk!
And then show you're a man by sitting down and letting me buy you a drink. That's my final offer, son.
You mean that's your final statement? 'Cause I'm gonna kill you, Star!
Bobby Jones went for his guns.
Ah! Great Scott! You killed the lad!
My God! That'll not go unavenged!
Charlie shot the second punk in the belly as he went for his derringer.
You still owe me $50, kid.
Help me! Oh, lordy, 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 my belly's on fire!
My God, somebody get a doctor and call the police!
Charlie walked to the bar.
Bartender, give me a drink. And one of them eggs over yonder. Shooting always makes me hungry.
Hungry? You barbarian!
Charlie noticed that Larry wasn't wearing a gun, so he did the next best thing. He walked over to him and slapped Larry across the mouth, knocking him down.
Oh, I'll sue you!
Help me!
Charlie punched out his empties, loaded up full, holstered his gun, and began peeling his egg.
Hey, somebody run fetch that new Undertaker fella that just set up business down the street. I've been looking forward to seeing that shiny black hearse and them fancy stepping horses.
Larry managed to pull himself to his feet.
Somebody get a doctor for that poor boy.
Well, ain't no doctor. You could go get the barber.
The barber?
There's a Ute medicine man down on the Lahara, but that young pup will done be swelled up and stinking some awful time he gets here. That old Ute's pretty good, but I ain't never heard of him raising the dead.
Oh, Jesus!
Patience. It won't be long now. Where's your next of kin, lad?
I don't want to die!
Yes, well, you should have chosen your companions with a bit more care. Next of kin?
I got a sister up in Denver. But she threw me out a couple of years ago.
The bat wings opened again, and a man dressed all in black stood in the space.
I heard shooting!
My, but your hearing is quite keen.
I am the Reverend Silas Mucklemort, minister of the gospel. I have come to this town to bring the word of God to the sinners who lust for blood money. Has this young man passed?
Which one? Bobby Jones here? Cold as a hammer.
Then it is my duty to tend to his needs.
You just keep your shit snatchers off my body, Reverend. I'm the undertaker in this town.
The second man in black stood at the door now.
I was referring to his spiritual needs, you jackass.
Somebody pass the salt and pepper. I can't eat an egg without salt and pepper.
The next morning, Smoke was up and riding before dawn, having committed to memory the trail to a cul-de-sac where he would leave his horses. He planned to pack on his back what he felt he would need in his fight against the bounty hunters and the Lee Slater gang. He was there by mid-morning, and he transplanted several bushes over to the small opening and carefully watered them. To get to the opening, he had to ride behind a thick stand of timber, then angle around a huge boulder, and finally take a left into the lush little valley of about 10 acres with a small pool next to a sheer rock wall. Grass was belly high in places, ample feed for the horses for some time. If he didn't return, they could easily find their way out. Smoke put together a pack whose weight would have staggered the average man. He picked it up with his left hand. He would hike a few miles and then have a hot dinner, or lunch, Sally called it, and drink a whole pot of strong cowboy coffee. He wanted the scum and crud to see that smoke from his fire. He wanted them to come right to that spot. And by the time they got there, he would have a few surprises laid out for them. Smoke hiked what he figured was about 3 miles through wild and rugged country. Then he stopped and built a small, nearly smokeless fire for his coffee and bacon and beans. While his meal was cooking and the coffee pot boiling, he whittled on some short stakes, sharpening one end to a needle point. After his meal, Smoke went to work making the campsite look semi-permanent and laying out some rather nasty pitfalls for the bounty hunters and outlaws. That done, he tossed some logs on the fire and slipped back into the timber where he'd hidden his pack. He waited with his .44-40. Curly Rogers and his pack of five hyenas were the first to arrive. The outlaws didn't come busting in. They laid back from the camp and looked the situation over for a time. They saw the lean-to Smoke had built and what appeared to be a man sleeping under a blanket, protected by the overlaid boughs.
That might not be Jensen Thumbs.
Well, so what? Wouldn't be the first time someone got shot by accident.
I don't like it, Taylor. It just looks too damn pat to suit me.
Maybe Slim got led into him. He may be hard hit and holed up, Curly.
Well, maybe, yeah, that must be it. You think you can engine up yonder for a closer look, Bill?
Sure, but why don't we just shoot him from here?
A shot would bring everybody fogging. Then we'd probably have to fight some of them others over Jensen's carcass. A knife don't make no noise.
Yeah. I'll just slip this between his ribs.
As Bell stepped out with the knife in his hand, Smoke tugged on the rope he'd attached to the sticks under the blankets. What the outlaws thought to be asleep in her wounded Smoke Jensen suddenly moved.
Damn!
Bell jumped back into the timber.
All right. This ain't gonna work. We gotta shoot him, I reckon. One shot might not attract no attention. Bud, use your rifle and put one shot in him. This close, one round will kill him for sure.
Bud lined up the form in the sights. Smoke again tugged on the rope, and the stick man rose off the ground a few inches, then fell back simultaneous with the firing of the gun.
We got him! We killed Smoke Jensen! The money's hard! Come on!
We're rich!
The men raced toward the small clearing, their guns drawn. The ground suddenly seemed to open up under Taylor's boots. He fell about 18 inches into a pit, two sharpened stakes tearing into the calves of his legs. He writhed in pain, unable to free himself from the sharpened stakes. Bell tripped a piece of rawhide 2 inches off the ground, and a tied back, fresh and springy limb sprang forward. The limb whacked the man on the side of the head, tearing off one ear and knocking the man unconscious.
What the hell?
Smoke fired from concealment. The .44 slug taking one man in the right side and exiting out his left side. He was dead when he hit the ground.
It's a trap!
Curly ran for the timber, and in his haste, he ran right the hell over Bell. Smoke lined up Bud and fired just as the man turned, the slug hitting the man in the ass. Bud fell and rolled on the ground, throwing himself into cover. Smoke fired again, the slug hitting a tree and blowing splinters in Thumb's face, stinging and bringing blood.
Let's get going from here!
What about Taylor in that hole?
Hell with him! Let's get!
Smoke lay in the timber and listened to the outlaws beat their retreat, then stepped out into his camp. He took the dead man's ammo belt and tossed his guns into the brush. Then he walked over to Taylor, who had passed out from the pain in his ruined legs. He took his ammunition, tossed his guns into the brush, and then jerked the stakes out of the man's legs. Smoke took the food from the saddlebags of the two remaining horses, then led one animal back to the campsite. Then he poured a canteen full of water on Taylor.
Time to ride. If I ever see you again, I'll kill you.
I can't get up on no horse. My legs is ruined.
Then I guess I'd better put you out of your misery.
No!
Taylor crawled to his horse and pulled himself up by clinging to the stirrup and the fender of the saddle.
Oh, you ain't no decent human being. What you doing to me ain't right. I need a doctor. You a devil, Jensen.
Then you pass the word, Pusbag. You make damn sure all your scummy buddies know I don't play by the rules. Now ride, you bastard, before I change my mind and kill you.
No!
Smoke shoved the dead body over the side of the small plateau and began throwing dirt over the fire, making certain it was out. Then he sat down and poured himself a cup of coffee.
All in all, this has been a very productive morning.
Hell
with this goddamn circus going on, there must be over 1,000 people in town. I reckon I better hire some more deputies. You know any good men, Earl?
Funny you should ask.
15 minutes later, Sheriff Silva swore in Lewis, Johnny, and Cotton.
Have you received warrants for Smoke's arrest yet?
I tossed him in a trash can. There ain't no lawman out here gonna try to arrest Smoke Jensen. Not none that has a lick of sense. I know all about that shooting in Idaho years ago. It was a fair fight. If you want to call Smoke being outnumbered 20-1 fair, those warrants are bogus.
An old miner who had just loped into town on his mule hurried through the office door.
Big shooting about 10 miles out of town, Sheriff. I don't know if they was outlaws or bounty hunters. One and the same, if you ask me. But anyway, the man who stopped by my tent for bandages and sitch had one ear tore slap off. He said another man dropped into a pit of some sort that had sharpened stakes in it. Run through both his legs. Terrible sight to see, he said. Another fella was shot dead, and another was shot plumb through his ass. Both sides.
You stay out of the mountains and tell other miners to do the same. That's a Lee Slater gang and some bounty hunters chasing a man. Looks like some of them caught up with him, too.
All them fellers chasing after just one man? Good Lord, who are they after?
Smoke Jensen.
Smoke Jensen? Shit! I'd sooner run up on a pack of grizzly bears and tangle with him.
I think they're beginning to discover that. But I'll wager they'll press on because they have no choice in the matter. They have to get Smoke out of the way.
I swear, some folks ain't got the sense God gave a dog.
Has Luddy and his crew been back into town?
No, not in days.
Main reason I rode down here was to tell you that Luddy's hiring fighting men and paying top wages. Whole passel of them rode through my town. Me and the boys sent them packing. One-eyed Jake and that Mexican gunslinger Carbone was among the bunch.
I know them both. They're top guns. Did you recognize any of the others?
Oh, yeah. Nick Johnson, the Carl twins, Rod and Randy, and Rich Coleman.
Well, that's a whole army right there. Earl's told us something about this Luddy Charles, about his being brother to Lee Slater, about how it's a good bet he's tied up in all this. Ain't they enough evidence to move against him and shut him down?
Not quite. I received a wire from the governor this morning. Early this morning. He's not happy with all the press we're getting. He's afraid this town is gonna blow wide open, and personally, I think there's a good goddamn chance of that happening, too. Now, there's a federal judge in Denver working very hard to overturn those warrants against Smoke, but that's gonna take some time. The governor said Smoke was on his own in this. I wired him back and told him that Jensen was one of my deputies and he damn sure was not alone in all this. Whatever he was doing up in the mountains comes under the business of keeping the law and order. I expect by the time I get back, I'll have several replies on my desk. They should make for interesting reading.
Reading between the lines, Sheriff. Smoke's on his own in the mountains, except for Charlie. You want us to stay in Rio, right?
I'd appreciate it, boys. If the governor has to send the state militia in here, that's gonna make him real unhappy.
Then here we'll stay, Sheriff. Do you think Luddy has plans to attack the town, strip it bare, and leave this part of the country?
That's a possibility that I've considered. At first, I think his plan was to hit the miners and the stages carrying gold and silver out. Maybe he might still do that. But I think now that Jensen has his brother's men out looking for him, he just might turn his back on Lee and use the men he has to wipe this town clean.
Brotherly love doesn't run very deep in that family, does it?
That's just a guess on my part. I mean, who the hell really knows what Lee and Luddy will do?
Charlie Starr watched with some amusement in his hard eyes as Curly's group tried to treat the wounded. Charlie left his horse and walked to within 30 yards of the outlaw band's camp. Now he was casually leaning up against a tree at the edge of the clearing. Bud was lying on his stomach, his breeches down around his boots, his bare butt shining in the moonlight, while Thumbs Morton poured alcohol on the bullet holes.
Ah! Shit, that stings!
One side of Thumb's face was swollen and red-looking. Bell Harrison had a bloody bandage wrapped around his head, and Taylor's legs from the knees down were wrapped in dirty, bloody bandages.
I'm gonna kill that son of a bitch. Torture him. Make it last. Burn him. Yeah, I'll start with his feet in a fire and work up.
My legs is real hot, boys. I'm burning up. I think Jensen put something on them steak points. Poison, maybe.
Charlie figured Smoke had probably found some bear crap and smeared the points with it. Or he might have used some poisonous plant leaves.
I can't do no more for you, bud. I hate Smoke Jensen.
Charlie worked his way around the clearing until he reached a spot about 10 yards from the bitching and moaning group of deadbeats. He pulled both 44s from leather.
What the hell was that?
I didn't hear nothing.
I wonder if Jensen gave Lake a decent burying.
He gave him about the same as I'm gonna give you.
Son of a bitch! Charlie Star!
Charlie's first slug knocked Bell sprawling, his right arm hanging broken and useless by his side. Curly headed for the horses. Thumbs Morton was hit in the right side, the bullet shattering a rib and angling off to tear through a kidney. As Curly made the horses and mounted, Thumbs lifted his six gun. He missed. Charlie didn't. Bell struggled to his boots and lifted his left-hand gun. Charlie perforated the man's belly, then stepped back into the timber and was gone, leaving Bud and Taylor alive in the middle of the carnage. Back in Rio, a half dozen more rowdies rode in on their way to the Seven Slash Ranch. They reined up in front of the saloon and swung down from the saddle, trail weary from a long day's ride.
Damn, a whiskey's gonna taste good.
Keep moving, boys.
The men turned to the voice behind them, and what they saw chilled them right down to their dirty socks. Louis Longmont, Cotton Pickens, Johnny North, and Earl Sutcliffe, all four stood in the street. All four of them with sawed-off shotguns in their hands. To a man, they kept those hands very still.
We're just getting a taste of whiskey.
You won't get it here. None of you. Ride on to the Seven Slash if you want a drink.
Louis Longmont. You better fold, Louis. You're gonna lose this pot. Believe me.
Life's a game of chance, Stevens.
Put them greeners down, and we'll take you all right here and right now.
Now, Willis. You know how talking strains your brain.
Longmont, I ain't never liked you. You got a smart damn mouth hooked to your face. I've always heard how bad you was. But I'm from Missouri and I gotta be showed. So why don't you just show me?
Anytime you're ready, Willis.
You can take him, Willis. He's all showboat, that's all he is.
$100 says he can't.
You got a bet, gambler.
Willis made his play. Louis shot him just as the man cleared leather, the slug knocking him back on the steps leading up to the boardwalk. Willis managed to lift his gun. Louis plugged him again.
You dirty son of a bitch.
Willis was still trying to jack back the hammer of his 45.
I can still do it.
Willis lifted his gun again. Louis shot him in the center of the head. Died with his mouth and his eyes wide open.
You owe me $100, Devers. Greenbacks or gold?
I'll pay you. But your day is coming, Louis. You just remember that.
If it comes from the likes of you, Devers, it'll come from the back. Because you don't have the courage to face me eye to eye. With knife or gun or even fist, for that matter.
We'll see, Louis. We'll see.
How about now, Devers? You want to bet your life?
Turns out Devers didn't want to wager any more that day. Back in Washington, D.C., the chief of the U.S. Marshals Service looked across his desk at a group of senators. Those senators were very unhappy.
Smoke Jensen is a national hero. He's had books and plays written about him. School children worship him, and women around the nation love him for the family man he is. The telegrams I'm receiving from people tell me they don't believe these murder warrants are valid. I want your opinion on this matter, Chief, and I want it right now.
Well, I don't believe the charges would stick for a minute in a court of law, Senator. But a federal judge signed them, and we have to serve them. The information I'm receiving indicates that our people out west are not at all eager to arrest Smoke Jensen. They have, shall we say, dropped out of sight for a time?
Then the Marshal's service is out of the picture.
For all intents and purposes, yes.
What about the stories I've read in the newspaper reporting that hundreds of bounty hunters are chasing Jensen?
Well, you know how that rag tends to blow things all out of proportion. The reporter they sent out there to cover this story wouldn't know a bounty hunter from a cigar store Indian. He's never been out west of the Mississippi River in his entire life until now.
Well, according to this New York paper...
Oh, that paper's even worse. Smoke Jensen is probably up against, at best, just 100 people.
Just 100? Chief, he is one man.
You ever seen Smoke Jensen, Senator?
No.
I have. One time about 10 years ago when I was working out west, 3 men jumped him in a bar in Colorado. When the dust settled, 2 of those men were dead and the 3rd was dying. Smoke was leaning up against the bar, both hands filled with .44s. He holstered his guns, drank his beer, fixed him a sandwich, and went across the street to his hotel room for a night's sleep. Now, I'm not saying he can pull this thing off and come out of it without taking some lead, but if anyone can do it, Smoke Jensen can. I can wish him well, but other than that, my hands are tied until some other federal judge overrides those warrants.
Judge Richards has left town on a vacation. He'll be back in 2 weeks, so his office told me.
Well, he'd better stay gone. Because when smoke comes down from those mountains, I got me a hunch he's Washington-bound with a killing on his mind.
Well, we certainly can't allow that.
You gonna be the one to tell Jensen that, sir?